Good evening and welcome to our Tuesday night celebration of life. It's great to be with everyone tonight. I just want to remind everyone that next Tuesday evening, Ramon and I will be gone for the holiday season for Thanksgiving. We're traveling to New York City to be with our daughter and her husband, and then down to Washington, D.C. to be with our son and his wife. We get to see some grandkids we haven't seen for a few months, so we're very excited to do that. This will be, we don't do this very often, but next week is Thanksgiving, and many of you will be planning to get away for that long weekend, so have a great time together as a family, celebrating this wonderful time in the world and all of our many, many blessings that we have as people. So take that time to enjoy that. Could you lift that up just a little bit for me, sweetheart? Thank you. It's raising the microphone up just a little bit. There you go. Perfect. Thank you. Just want everybody to be able to hear that's on the video portion, because that is your microphone for that event. So great to have you here with us tonight. Every Tuesday night, we take the opportunity to discuss one of the six qualities of an intentional creator. An intentional creator is someone who says, I'm really serious about taking my dreams and turning them into tangible reality. I want, in short, real money and a real bank account to buy a real couch. I don't want fantasy, and I want catastrophe. I don't want frustration, overwhelm. I want to be in creation. And we discover that when we're in creation, we want to be focused on engaging in life. We don't want ease. We want engagement. We're going to embrace principles. We're going to connect and serve other people. We're going to create value everywhere we go and with everyone we meet. And we're going to contribute to the world. We're going to live a life of significance. Now, for us to do this, we'll want to master these six qualities of an intentional creator. We always save self-esteem for last. Many of you have been through a personal coaching or a group coaching program. We've been through this discussion. Tonight, we're going to go in a couple of new and perhaps interesting directions. But this is an opportunity for us to take on this very sacred space. This is the conversation we have with ourself about ourself. Now, we can have conversations about other people and doing tasks and discipline and structure and how we feel about our life and how we what should be motivating us or driving us. This is a deeply personal, intrinsic conversation that we have with ourself about ourself. And one of the things we want to do tonight is get really clear. I want to create some of this toxic dialogue. Then I want to walk you through some very specific things to assist us in starting to overcome this dialogue. Now, we've been doing some of them as we've worked on the other qualities. But let's understand, what creates this challenge? What causes this dialogue? Now, I'm going to do a little differently than I have in the past. I'm going to go to one of the most insidious challenges we can face, one of the most difficult. And that is if we've had a traumatic event occur in our life, one that has damaged the fragile underpinnings of trust. This could be a sexual abuse as a child or as an adult. This could be emotional abuse. This could be a death of someone close to us. This could be the loss of a job after investing numerous years in a profession and all of a sudden becoming what we might feel irrelevant. This can happen from a serious financial setback, especially if our stuff was really important to us. These are the fragile underpinnings of trust that get destroyed. And they have us wonder, you know, what's wrong with me? Why can't I have that? What's happening here? So we have these fragile underpinnings of trust. Now, many of these will probably require some intervention, therapeutic intervention. And it's very healthy to do that, to meet with someone who is skilled and trained to be able to guide you through and process through some of those more difficult moments. Some of them are very hard to let go of, so that we can move forward. We talk about in next week, in our quality number one, about the art of connection. connection and taking stuff out of our sack and engraving it on our heart. Some can't even look at the sack, whatever it is back there. This happened in the past. It's so painful, it's hard to even look at. If you're in that place, be kind to yourself and see if you can't get a referral to a qualified therapist who can help you process that. Because until this issue is resolved, it's hard to show up. And if we're not showing up, if we got this dialogue going on inside ourselves, if those of you watching the video, you can see me with my hands in front of my face with this dialogue going on, and it's dangerous. It's dangerous because we're missing opportunities. They're walking right by us. In addition to missing those opportunities, we're also robbing those around us of our greatest self. We're not whole and complete. We're not feeling genuine and authentic. We're feeling less than, unworthy, incapable. And that kind of a dialogue just is so destructive. With the new book, The Observer's Chair, we take on these concepts. If you haven't picked up the book, go to www.augmandino.com/chair and take a look at it. We spend 117 pages on a topic we'll spend tonight on. To go into a little bit more detail to help us understand this principle of stepping back, being the observer of our thoughts, and not being trapped by this toxic dialogue so that we can show up for not only ourselves but for others. But this is a really difficult one. This one can be really traumatic. Another one is called secrets. Now, secrets are typically addictions. This is alcohol, drugs, eating disorders, even pornography addictions. We'll talk a little bit more about how pornography can be a destroyer. Well, let's do it right now. I've got it right here in front of me. I just pulled up a section of the book entitled Counterfeit Pleasure. I decided to take this on in the new book, and I'll share it with you because it is a destroyer of self-esteem. This is not a religious discussion. This isn't... Well, it's probably a moralistic discussion a little bit. But I open this with, we can strive to protect First Amendment rights for others. Absolutely. First Amendment's so important. But we can also choose to make wise decisions about our own behavior. I'm just reading right from the book. I've witnessed firsthand and on numerous occasions the devastating impact that pornography can have on self-esteem. Individually, it negatively impacts our ability to have agape love and authentically connect with others. Instead of valuing the sanctity of human life, it objectifies human beings. It promotes destructive fantasies that artificially create arousal and self-centric satisfaction, which in turn counterfeits heightened feelings reserved for intimacy. Intimacy that is focused on meeting the needs of a partner. It can also drive a person deep into an emotional cocoon, supporting reclusive tendencies and isolating a person from reality. Destroys self-trust. That's the first half. So we can become very self-centric in our sexual behaviors. And intimacy is about expression of love to another person based on total commitment and trust, intimacy being the expression of that commitment and trust. In relationships, this unhealthy habit is one of the greatest destroyers of self-esteem. It impedes true intimacy, the ultimate expression of commitment and trust, by bringing these salacious fantasies into the sacred space of union. I'm being very careful how I say this. A partner can intuit when someone's mind is somewhere else. Questions of personal beauty and ultimately self-worth are unavoidable. This only exacerbated when a partner discovers the source. I have heard women cry out loud, "Why am I not enough?" I've seen the so many times. I finally decided to put it in the book. I've talked a little bit about counterfeit pleasure, but it had to be here because I had some really poignant and profound moments this last year with coaching clients who just made this discovery. And what it does to a woman's self-esteem is just so incredible. Awful incredible. This is often followed by why am I not enough? This is often followed by a litany of possible reasons, most of which are focused on concerns about their outward appearance. The comparison game is common enough without this challenge. We'll talk about it in a moment. But when someone discovers that a partner is engaged in pornography, it raises the self-deprecating dialogue to dangerous and heartbreaking levels. If we only knew the full impact that this unhealthy habit can have on the self-esteem of our partner, we would more consciously choose to stand and move over here to the observer's chair. That's where our thoughts are clear. Here we would never debase a human being. We would be empathetic. We would possess a deep and profound reverence for the infinite worth of every human being. We would value each person as unique and irreplaceable, including ourselves. If we are struggling with pornography, measured by making promises to ourselves or others to abstain and then breaking those promises, it's time for professional intervention. Here is the truth. Until harmful habits such as this one are pruned off, we cannot expect our soul to be whole and complete and our relationships to become a partnership. Everything about pornography is antithetical to healing self-esteem. I wanted that to be as tasty as possible, but it's time for this to be emphatically stated that this destructive force is just so deadly when it's brought into a committed relationship. And I think that's probably enough for tonight on that topic. So we talk about these secrets. You know, if we're dealing with alcohol addiction or a drug addiction, I've had a pretty precious thing happen really close to us, watching a father and a brother, after 51 years of life, be reunited. And I can think of decades of pain and frustration and anger, all the craziness, and watch the beauty of this union, where one is paying the price to be sober and the price to make amends, and the other is found in his heart to forgive, and the peace that has come. I only share that so that if anyone on the phone is dealing with, or personally, or has someone close to them, we want to be very careful if we are dealing with someone who is struggling with this, that we don't enable their behavior. I want to seek professional assistance. I am not qualified. I can tell you what we've done and how we stopped enabling and created a situation where someone could face the magnitude of their challenge. But you want to do that under the guidance of a professional who is skilled in the area of alcohol or drug addiction. If you're struggling yourself, this is going to take some courage. But I've watched this over and over again played out in the lives of individuals, including Og Mandino himself, finding the courage and the support to live one day at a time sober and to be a blessing to those that are around them and to see over time all the pain, all the destruction that can occur, be healed. So those healings of self-esteem, traumatic events, secrets, often require therapeutic intervention. Let's be okay with that. There is some that we can do. If we have been through a traumatic event and we're ready to move forward, then coaching that we're doing would be very appropriate. Then we get to go through the process in a traumatic event, and we get to ask ourselves, holding that event in our hands, if you will, is anyone else suffering from a similar wound? This should sound familiar. We study this next week when we're talking about connection with people. And the answer is always yes. And so we take that experience and we press it against our chest and engrave it on our heart. We hold it differently. Instead of a burden that we've been carrying around, baggage that's been painful, it becomes a blessing because we're gonna use it to bless another person. If we're not dragging it around with resentment and anger and frustration and bitterness, if we're holding it in our heart, it's readily available. We can hear someone differently. We'll ask questions no one else would dare to ask or may not even have the right to ask. And we can create understanding at a very deep level for someone who may be hurting. Just know whatever's happened, if it's happened in this area of traumatic events. And I'm thinking about not just the sexual abuse or the emotional abuse. Those can be really challenging. I'm finding people who have been so attached to their stuff that it's really hard to let go. And I can appreciate this. And sometimes when we've had a loss, we lose our own identity because our identity was our watch. It was our car. It was our house. You know, I've told you the stories, and you probably read them, and today I begin a new life, about where we were back in 1988 and 89, where I was my Rolex watch. I wore it like a watch model, you know, like, did you see it go by? If not, it's coming back again. Watch for it. I remember being down at the bottom of the hill of Mount Helix in my Mercedes, my new Mercedes, with my Rolex watch, and realizing that it's not on my wrist, it's back home, and you know, it's going to take me 10 minutes back up and 10 minutes back down. I'll be 20 minutes late for my appointment. Should I just go to the appointment without it? And I went back home and got it. And I get this. Now, we can get really attached to our stuff. I tell a story in this new book about a sports car that I once owned after our finances got cleaned up. And one day I just realized that I was becoming my stuff again, so it's stuck in the garage. It's parked in the garage, 9 months. Now, Ramona would remind me that part of that was winter, which it probably would have been parked during part of that winter anyway. But when I went back out, the battery was dead, and so was my attachment. It's great to have nice things and to take care of them, respect them. But when we become our stuff, and then our stuff is taken away, we lose our identity. We don't know who we are. And we are magnificent. We are nature's greatest miracle. We're an incredible creation, whether we have stuff or not. So we want to be careful that we don't become our stuff. That can be a traumatic moment for some. If there's anybody on the phone tonight, I'm approaching this a little bit differently than I have in the past because I just felt inspired to. If there's anybody on the phone tonight who's taken a serious loss, you know, we're going to go right into the comparison game because it's the next one up the ladder. You know, here we are. We're holding this traumatic event in our hands. This is our clay. Our clay is our home was underwater or we missed mortgage payments and we couldn't keep up and they took it away from us, foreclosed on it, or they repossessed a car or we got laid off or we don't have money to buy groceries tonight. I mean, wherever we might be, here's our clay. And one of the great risks is that we can, in one of these traumatic moments, trigger the comparison game. Where we want somebody else's clay. I don't want these circumstances. These are painful. They keep me up at night. I can't stop thinking about them. It's destroying relationships. I don't want this. I want my life to be different than this. There might be a moment of mourning. It probably is appropriate if you've taken a huge financial loss. But here's the truth. Nothing's going to change until we look at that and say, that's my clay, and find purpose. Zog said, the end of scroll 4. Let me just open that up for a moment. I'll read it to you. End of scroll 4. He said, I've been given eyes to see and a mind to think, and now I know a great secret of life, for I perceive at last. And it's interesting he said that. I perceive at last. I finally figured this out. After all my resistance and resentment and frustration and overwhelm and discouragement, at last I finally figured out that all my problems, discouragements, and heartaches are, in truth, great opportunities in disguise. I will no longer be fooled by the garments they wear, for mine eyes are open. I'll look beyond the cloth, and I will not be deceived. I'm nature's greatest miracle. I can't think of a situation in our life, as horrible as it was to lose everything and spend 10 years paying back $10,000, I wish it was, $1 million in debt. That last check sent in August of 2000 for $14,000 went in the bank, and so glorious. I can't think, let me restate that. I go back and I reflected on that experience in the book Today, I Begin a New Life. And I think about what I learned about letting go of resentment. I think about where we relocated and what I needed to do to create and what it, people that had introduced to us in our family and how all of our children, every one of them, met their spouse in that process. Isn't that amazing? They all met their spouses in that process. If that wouldn't have happened, there are people who wouldn't be in our life. We wouldn't be here. These are incredible experiences retrospectively. I wrote in an article the other day that, and quoting from the book, that miracles are only miracles in retrospect. And the truth is, we're probably standing in the middle of one right now. So if you're in that moment of a traumatic event that's just eating you alive, just what would happen if you said, I wonder, where is this miracle? I know there's a miracle in here somewhere. What am I to learn from this? What door of opportunity could open up for me that would have never opened any other way? What direction in life might I choose to go that I may not have gone any other way? What have I learned? What have I done? What has happened in our lives? I think this is just a great gift for our own children. I could go into great detail about what our life was like before and what it's like now. And I just know that the difference could have destroyed our children. Probably would have. I grew up learning how to work, and they just about didn't. That would have been tragic. I wanted to save them from all that pain. But yet, it's in their work. They become magnificent human beings. So, to that comparison game, here we are holding our clay. It's the third cause of self-esteem. We had traumatic events and secrets. Now we've got this clay that we're holding. We're going, And we want somebody else's. We want to be someone else. I want to be 7 foot tall and playing basketball, or I want to be over there traveling the world, or I want to be someone else, somewhere else, doing something different. This is probably the single greatest decision we can make to heal our self-esteem. The single greatest decision. The magnitude of deciding, this is my clay. And avoiding some depressive feelings of crap and giving up. Instead, finding excitement and being aware of where we are. Because quite often when we don't want our clay, what we also discover is that not only are we focused on somebody else's clay, we are not focused on our problems, and so we have been ignoring them. We've been trying to pretend they don't exist. We're trying to wish them away, and there isn't a problem that just goes away. They just get worse. And when we finally take a control and take a hold of them, there's a sense of empowerment that comes. We are finally alive. Our lives don't need to change for the joy to come. The joy comes the instant we choose us. I choose me. This is who I am. Okay, now I can go to work on this body. Now I can go to work on this mind. Now I can go to work on this debt or this house or this relationship. Now I can go to work on it because I've chosen this. I'm not being distracted by anything else. Can you feel this tonight? How often we spend, and many do, a lifetime, wishing it was different than it is. And so it never gets better. It usually just gets worse. And then there are those who stop and go, you know, this is the clay I've been given. This is the gift. This is my gift. It may not look like one right now. It may not feel like one. But I'm going to take this because it's all I really get. This is what I get. I don't get his or hers. I take what I get, and I start to create the most I can with it. Powerful piece. So now I'm creating with it, and I am honoring the gift and the giver of the gift. Now, we talked briefly about this last week, but this is a huge cause of self-esteem, the comparison game. And we're going to make that decision. I think it's time to consciously say, nope, this is it. This is what we get. I wrote in my journal today, what would be different if I accepted, there's something we want to do with our business, and there's a certain direction we want to take it. And I keep having this little nervousness about it. And I said, what would happen if that were the only option, and that's what I chose to do? And it was interesting how creative we instantly become when we make a marketing decision about where we want to put emphasis with a business and with our lives and with our relationships. All of a sudden, we can start being kinder, a little bit more available, a little bit more tolerant, and having a little bit more agape love. We're saying, I choose this. I'm part of my clay. If you've got a companion, is I choose this companion. We've made a commitment for life or whatever it might be in your faith, and we decide to keep this commitment. What's different in a relationship when two people decide to be committed? I've seen horrific circumstances turn around. It's possible. Well, that's the comparison game. The other one we've harped on for so long that sometimes I wonder if people are tired of hearing it, and that's unmet expectations, and it's the number one cause. The most significant decision we can make is to own our own clay. The single biggest cause of self-esteem challenges is unmet expectations. Really simple. When our mind creates an expectation, does that by vividly visualizing. It's a financial expectation or relationship expectation, and then life shows up differently. There is a horrific physiological reaction in the body. Just feel it. And we always turn inward. Because we're looking outward and everybody looks okay. We must be the only one struggling, the only one in the neighborhood's got a problem, or in the town. And so we turn inward and we say, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? Everybody else seems to have this. I can taste it. I can almost touch it. Why can't I have it? And we start playing out the scenarios. Is it because I was raised in a poor family and I never had anything and I'll never have anything and I don't understand money or I don't respect money or I've got a block, mental block about money? Can you hear all the stuff going on, questioning our beliefs and our values, and then we start questioning our ability. Maybe I don't have the time or I don't have the energy or I'm getting too old. All those kinds of issues, those ability issues. And then we go into the worth issues, where we start talking about, well, maybe it's because of that thing I did last summer, or that thing that I did when I was 19, or that thing I did when I was whenever. And we start playing out every mistake we ever made. Maybe it's because I haven't made the decision to get in tremendous shape. Maybe that's what it is. There's got to be a reason. So we're searching and searching and searching, endlessly trying to find the reason why we're not having what our mind has already so clearly seen. Just feel this with me for a moment. This is a sequence that we identified clearly in our research, and it was quite alarming to see. Not just to see, but the numbers of people in this process. 97% of those actively seeking abundance. That's an overwhelming percentage. With a 3% variation, statistical variation, it could be 100%. Almost 100% have a very vivid thought process. They have the ability to create these expectations, these concrete conditions for happiness, these mental monoliths that are non-negotiable. That's what happens in our mind. That's when we create it in our mind, that's how strong it is. And then life keeps showing up differently, which it always will. Always will. Then we just keep turning inward and perpetuating this dialogue. What's wrong with me? Now I know something about this one. I know something about this one. I've got thought processes that drive expectation. There are times when life doesn't show up the way that I want. And it's easy to hear this. I'm not going to go into my personal dialogue that much because I just caught myself in this the other day. I always believed I should have gone to law school. Didn't. We're just talking about this weekend. Going back and finishing a degree. Educational issues. That must be why this is happening or that is happening, whatever it might be. We all have hopes and dreams. Some of us have big, wild ones. But just know that when that's happening and you hear that dialogue, that self-destructive dialogue sitting in that chair over there, that you just get up from and come over here and sit where you can be whole and complete. I'm going to walk you through some of the things we'll want to do to actually get there. And hopefully these will give you some ideas. Just 1 second here. We want to become real and genuine and authentic. That's what it means to sit in this chair of the observer. And to be real means to be able to have relationships with people, to be comfortable. Now, when we got this nasty dialogue going on, sometimes we become reclusive. We don't want to hang out with people. We just want to buy a tropical island somewhere where I can tell all these annoying people to go to heck in a handbasket. Yeah, just get away from them. Start to have those feelings. Well, when we're here in this chair, we're real. And the secret to real is being focused on the needs of another person when we're listening. That's the secret. We can be so comfortable being the listener, just listening. And we can listen so well. And then ask questions that just boil to the surface. This is being real. Genuine. Genuine comes the word genus or genius. It's a little hard for some of us to grasp that we are to embrace our genius. That's being genuine. It's not so that we're boastful or arrogant. Those are all overcompensations for a feeling less than or having status feeling less than. Genuine is saying, I'm going to bring all that I have to the service of others. All that I have to the service of others. I'm going to listen intently. Ask empathetic questions. I'm going to be fully present. And interestingly enough, the greatest gift we give when we're being genuine is the gift of understanding. Someone feeling understood. We sometimes think we have to come up with, the answers to world hunger. No. This isn't like genuine as in 180 IQ. This is genius. It's emotional intelligence. Dan Goldman writes about this. It's our ability to be fully present in the now with another human being. That's the real genius. And the third is authentic. Enthos hectic. It means to be your true self. Your true self. We are not being our true self when we're in rebellion and when we're in resistance. We're just not our true self. When we're authentic, we wake up and we say, you know what, I'm self-determined. I was having lunch today with a person. person who has this measurement perfectly balanced, so self-determined. He doesn't need anybody to start him up. He doesn't need an alarm to wake him up. He doesn't need somebody to tell him where he needs to be. He is self-determined. He is acting on his own moral authority, doing the right thing for the right reason, the next right thing, because he wants to, and he gets to, and he chooses to. Imagine what it would be like if you woke up in the morning and you chose to go to work, and you chose to show up, and you chose to be cheerful no matter how you're feeling physically, and you chose to find good in other people, and you chose to listen for those verbal hints, you chose to step into their world, and you chose to catch yourself if your thoughts ever went into a destructive direction, and you stopped them, and you said, not going there today, I'm going to stay in creation, and you went into mental rehearsal about the next thing you're doing, or seeking inspiration, exploration, or planning, goal setting, problem solving. You chose to do this. You didn't need to have a coach tell you how to do it. You didn't need to have a spouse tell you how to do it. You didn't have to, your children have to tell you. This was a choice you made yourself. That's being authentic. That's what it means. Can you feel that? To be real? To want to connect with people? To be genuine? To be fully present, bringing all of your natural gifts, most of them based on your own life experiences, educationally and otherwise, to the service of another person, and being authentic, self-determined. Can you feel this? This is powerful, because the alternative is awful. The alternative is to engage in a process called pretend impressing. Impress means, I'm going to read this to you right out of the book, in a vain attempt to secure attention, admiration, or respect from others, and due to a lack of self-esteem. Our unhealthy habits may want us to impress people by emphasizing the magnitude of our possessions, contributions, or the importance of our ideas and opinions. When we let these habits determine our value based on how well we perform, how much money we make, or the things we own, we can find ourselves in a deep, dense black hole that can never be filled. We remain bound in the chair of unhealthy habits of thinking. So just check and see, is there anything that you have that you're really attached to? This would be the time to look at it. Now, I'm not suggesting you park your car in the garage for 9 months. You don't need to do that to figure this out. It's just a mental decision. I don't need this car. I could sell it tomorrow. Sell it tomorrow. And if you can, be okay, then you're okay. That means that you're being real and genuine and authentic. You're not trying to impress someone. The next one's called pretend. This is a common one today, especially in some businesses where you say, you know, fake it till you make it. No such thing. It's discernible by a person's mirror neurons. We try to pretend we're something we're not. If you're feeling like you're pretending, it's time to take action. Because pretending is a real burden. It takes energy. We're inside our world having a conversation with ourselves, trying to figure out how to make ourselves look more important and better than we are. What's the chance? Opportunities are walking right by us. It's walking right by us, and we're missing them. Because our mind is preoccupied with this dangerous tether called pretend. Another one is shame. This is a common one. I'm going to read this little story. It's only a couple paragraphs. I love this story. I remember when Ramon and I went on a retreat, and on the way home, we stopped and watched this movie. It had just been released. It's called The Mission. The character played by Robert De Niro in this is a mercenary and slave trader who has killed many people, including his own brother. Seeking penance, he fills to overflowing a large net with all of his weapons of war. He then drags this heavy, bulky burden behind him for miles. He forges a raging river, struggles up a steep, mud-covered mountainside, and then scales a treacherous cliff next to the, I used to be able to say this, Iguaza. Can you say it for me? Anyway, it's a fall in South America. Iguanu's Falls. Anyway, his destination is a secluded primitive area inhabited only by the indigenous people he had previously hunted. Arriving at the top, he is quickly surrounded by natives. One native draws a knife and approaches. Just as we think the native is going to exact revenge by cutting his throat, he instead cuts the rope, freeing the repentant man of his burden. He wept. Many of us know this sack. The steep climb, the grace that frees, and the tears that flow. The singular gift that can heal deep wounds. I'll just read this next paragraph because it's so descriptive. The word shame comes from the root word sham, which means to make a covering, like a pillow sham. When we feel guilty, we feel bad about what we've done. Shame is a much deeper, piercing feeling. We feel bad about who we are. When we feel shame, our natural genius is covered by a heavy blanket of self-deprecating thought processes that suffocate both our goodness and gifts. It's time for us to let go of shame. If we've been carrying something around from the past, let us use it as an experience to better serve another instead of a source of beating ourselves up. It can't be real and genuine and authentic if we're dragging around shame. I can hear the voice, yes, but you don't know what I did. And I say, is anybody else suffering from a similar wound? Anybody else? Be about healing their soul and not burdening your own. The last and fourth tether is called fear. Now, we all know this one from the acronym FEAR, false evidence appearing real. What does that mean? It's really simple. When we start catastrophizing, using our mind destructively, the body starts releasing cortisol, that lightning bolt. Our amygdala starts releasing those fear dendrites into our brain and starts shutting down our hippocampus. Most of you are very highly intuitive, and your intuition is picking up these signals. False evidence that appears real. So it's your intuition, the gift of your intuition, and the power of your thought process to vividly visualize, but you're using it destructively. You've been in fantasy, and now you're going through an autonomic response. You've been over a catastrophe, and now you're feeling depressed and angry and frustrated and overwhelmed. And it's releasing molecules into your body. You feel it at a cellular level. And your intuition is just picking up and going, oh, something's wrong. Heightened intuition. But false evidence appearing real. Now, we're not talking about real and present danger. I was just reading about this in my dad's history this last weekend. That when we lived down in Georgia, we lived on a home on stilts about 3 feet in the air. Backyard was dry swamp. Across the street was wet swamp. And when the seasons changed, so did the reptiles. They changed locations. And one day I came out after getting a drink of water, and right there in front of me in the driveway was a 5'2" timber rattler. And timber rattlers are thick. They're like 3.5-4 inches in diameter when they're that long. 10 rattles and a button. What an experience. Now that, you hear a rattlesnake, that's a different kind of fear. Your body's going to release a lot of the same chemicals, but they are there to assist you in having very acute awareness so that you can respond appropriately, run, act, fight, whatever it might be that's necessary. That's a different kind of fear. The fear we're talking about here is that fear that comes from destructive thought processes that cause chemical releases in our bodies, and our intuition picks it up and tells us something is not going well. Well, raising awareness. How do we raise awareness? The very first thing we do is we take the intentional creation assessment. It helps us see where the challenges are. Top right-hand side, self-esteem. Get to take a look at whole and completeness and confident and valiant and peaceful and deliberate and unconditional. And we can look down at the bottom right-hand side of your assessment and say, what kind of drivers are impacting this? Have I got a red goal-oriented, or an orange goal-oriented, or pragmatic that's orange, honorable that's red or orange, at it and say, wow, how am I feeling about my life? And then go to self-esteem and say, how am I feeling about me? Am I starting to question my worth and worthiness and my ability and beliefs? It's possible. So this is the very first step of awareness, is to get to know your assessment. Now, you're coaching, so you have intentional creation studios. If you go to your intentional creation studio, and you click on quality number 6, and in the middle section, the very first thing is click on assessment. In the right-hand side, you'll have those 6 measurements that I just mentioned, whole and complete, confident, valiant, peaceful, deliberate, and unconditional, show up with the color of the bar, the latest assessments you've taken, and quite an extensive definition. It'd be a great one for you to study, just to get to know what's happening. So that's number 1. Number 2 are the 10 scrolls. Neuroscientists tell us that to change a thought process, we need to have a component called density focus. That means that we're just so aware that when anything happens, in a pivotal moment, we're conscious enough to know we're in the pivotal moment. Instead of going where we usually go, we go to a better place. And the scrolls are one of the greatest forms of density focus on the planet. It's not the only form, but it's miraculous how they were written. Written in the language of the intrinsic, unlimited application, unlimited interpretation. They'll meet you wherever you are in your life. But the most important thing they do is they raise your awareness. They pull us out of the muck and the mire so that we can see. And if we read it in the morning, it prepares us for the morning. We read it at midday, that keeps us going during the day. Read it at night before we go to bed, so it sinks into our mysterious mind, as Og says, that part that never sleeps. The scrolls really are there to feed our soul and raise our awareness. That's their purpose. So use them. The next are the affirmations. In your intentional creation studio, click on quality number 6. The second topic in the middle column is affirmations. Click on that, and you'll have the 6 affirmations for self-esteem. If I want to be whole and complete, I am whole and complete. I enjoy being me, and I'm comfortable in my own skin. I recognize and embrace my irreplaceable value. I am fully available to serve others. And we start reading these affirmations. Now, in that section, there's an audio bar you can download to your iPhone or your iPod or smartphone. It's an MP3 file. I narrate these and I set them to music for you. So you can just listen to them over and over and over during the course of the day. Just know that. I also want to emphasize that these are becoming affirmations. These are not having affirmations. Having affirmations, here's an example. I am wealthy. I attract powerful people into my life. I have an estate home, a vacation home, several expensive vehicles, and a monthly income of $50,000 a month. That's all about having. Getting, taking, receiving. Secret desires and our intentions are generally ease and comfort. What happens is we go into fantasy. Having affirmations drive 97% of the population into fantasy. That's where we go. Now, instead of that, we go with a becoming affirmation. I am becoming helps us to get and stay grounded. This is a fundamental shift. Let's read one to you. So, on the other hand, becoming affirmations focus on changing our character, the person we want to become. Our secret desires and real intentions are to engage in life, embrace principles, connect and serve others, create value everywhere we go, and with everyone we meet and contribute to and enrich the world. That's what becoming affirmations do for us. They engage us in life, in becoming through our doing, and having is the natural outcome. Now, we can have some of these habits of thinking. We want to destroy these monsters. I must destroy my old habits, my bad habits, and prepare new furrows for good seed. It's interesting. 1968, this gets distributed, this book. And neuroscientists didn't know anything about this in 1968. But this new furrow is a new neural pathway. I plant good seed, it grows. Think about the metaphor. It grows into a new habit. Because scientists tell us we can grow a new habit, a new neural pathway. Instead of going the old way, we go a new way over and over and over again. And pretty soon it starts firing that way naturally. And as soon as that new habit is formed, the brain synaptically prunes off the bad habit. Boom. New habits formed. It's a great thing to know. Now, as we're going through this process, creating these new furrows, I've got a fun little exercise I want to do with you just for a moment tonight. We'll play with this. I want you to hear some of the dialogue. Go through and look at the definitions and see if you've got potentially dangerous dialogue. I want you to start hearing it. I remember the first time I wrote about it in the observer's chair, the first time I heard myself say, David, you're so stupid. I remember standing in the mirror in the bathroom. I just made a bad business decision. It was, David, you're so stupid. It was the first time I'd heard it, consciously heard it. What I realized was this. I'd been saying those words for decades. I'd never heard them. I did retrospectively. They just echoed. But I finally heard them. I didn't create them by becoming aware. I just became aware of what had been destroying my soul, and now I could do something about it. You're going to want to hear it. We want to play a game. It's called, That Is Not Like Me. That is me. That's how it works. What's wrong with me? I can almost touch it. I can almost taste it. Why can't I have it? Does God not love me? That's not like me. I'm whole and complete. I enjoy being me and comfortable in my own skin. That's me. You have an opportunity in the observer's chair. I've got several examples of this for all six of these characteristics, all the negative dialogue you can imagine. What's the use? I'm so stupid. I knew better. Why did that happen to me? I should have stopped it. I never get the answers I need. I never make the money I need. Who do I think I am anyway? That's not like me. And then we read an affirmation and say, that is me. I want to read this one to you because this is confident. Remember we talked about the comparison game? Listen to this. I wish I had her hair, body, personality, charisma, skin, intelligence, education. I wish I had his car, home, bank account, financial freedom. I am so ugly. Fat, old, bald, short, tall, slow. I should have married someone else. Had more children, less children, more successful children. Raised my children differently. Listened more, showed up more, been more loving. I'm such a failure compared to the rest of my friends. Family, coworkers, community, church members. I should have had a different career. Invested more wisely, spent or borrowed less money. Sold sooner, stayed in longer. Had a different business partner. I don't have the time or energy to start over. I don't know how long I can keep this doing this. Why did I do that? What's the use in even trying? By the time you get done with these, if you want to have some fun, this is on page 91 and 92 and 93 of the book. Start playing this game with yourself. Every time you hear a negative dialogue, you want to hear it, and this will help you hear some of it because you'll go, oh my goodness, I say that. That is not like me. Then read the affirmation related to it. That is me. Now just know that there are going to be some thought processes. They're going to say, yeah, that's not true. That's not true. And this is what you're going to say. Yes, you're right. When I surrender my free will to you, speaking of those thoughts over there in that other chair, when I surrender my free will to you, yep, I really do some stupid things, but I'm choosing to sit over here today. This is me. We can't play like we've never done stupid things when we surrender to our thought processes, but we do. We just want to get clear on, that's not like me. That's like them. And when I surrender my thought processes to them, that's what I do. That's not like me. This is me. This is me. Let's get increasingly comfortable in nurturing these seeds so that we can grow. We take this action, these pivotal moments, each time one comes. Instead of going over there, we go to a different direction. We've got to be conscious. So we've got our assessment. We've got our scrolls. We've got our affirmations. And now starting next week, we'll go through the qualities of connection with people, and then mental creation, and then physical creation. These are the principles of how to take the action. And every time we do, we strengthen. We prepare that furrow, plant the seeds, we nurture it, we pull out the weeds, it grows and matures into a new thought process. Is it that simple? And the answer is yeah. It's that simple. Wow, our time is just flying by tonight. In the book, I've got a new stillness exercise. It's recorded. You get the audio for it. If you want to get a hold of that, grab that. This is a little bit longer, more detailed exercise. There's also a chapter called My Freedom Declaration. It starts out with the flame that burns inside of me cries out. I've been uniquely shaped and molded and prepared for my life's mission. I matter. I stand ready to be counted as a victor. No longer will I wallow in my misery. No longer will I focus on what is missing. I will focus on what remains and what I can build with what I have. Never again will I go down into that black hole seeking answers to that unanswerable question, why me? I will ask the rich and ennobling question, is anyone else suffering from a similar wound? Yes, it was painful. But I have willingly engraved these experiences on my heart so that I can have empathy for others. I listen using my heart and it amplifies my intuition. I courageously ask empathetic questions that demonstrate my understanding. I take down walls of hate and suspicion and create connection. There is finally purpose in my suffering. My experiences matter. Using these experiences, I choose to be and create a safe place for others. I choose to lift and build others. My soul is filled with joy overflowing, and this joy is healing my soul. When I am sitting in the observer's chair, being my true self, free from the noise of my unhealthy habits of thinking and the burdens of the past, I use my gift of vivid visualization to hear inspired whispers and see visions of possibility. My passion is ignited. I trust my intuition and act immediately on these whispers and visions, as if they were urgent assignments. I discover the validity of each, and in so doing, I'll close with this tonight. I trust and am trusted. I know and am known. And this knowingness is the single greatest source for healing my self-esteem. Let's begin our awareness journey tonight. I look forward to being back with you because now you know for the next several weeks we're going to be working on self-esteem as it relates to connection, mental creation, and physical creation. We'll continue this journey next week. Thanks, everyone. Oh, 2 weeks, sorry, two weeks. Next week is Thanksgiving week. We'll be gone. We'll be back with you in 2 weeks. We look forward to being with you then. Thanks, everyone. Good night.